Mother Earth is pregnant for the third time, for y'all have knocked her up. I have tasted the maggots in the mind of the universe. I was not offended, for I knew I had to rise above it all or drown in my own shit.
All right. Good morning. This is Sam Sebring, and you're listening to Tell It Like It Is on WGXC 90.7 FM. And coming up, we have an interview with Don Moore and Chris Reed about the Hudson Waterfront Project. But right now, I have some environment news. It was announced Monday that Carol Browner, the White House coordinator for energy and climate change policy, will be stepping down in the coming weeks. According to a White House official, no decision has been made on whether she would be replaced or if the position will simply disappear. According to this story in the New York Times by John Broder, she is leaving with her major goals unmet and the EPA under siege by Republicans who claim the EPA is imposing costly new pollution rules. I mention this story as it has relevance to issues with the Lafarge modernization proposal we've been reporting on here at Tell It Like It Is and on the WGXC newsroom. Lafarge, as part of the Portland cement industry, opposes the EPA rules, and House Republicans, earlier this month, announced a Congressional Review Act resolution that seeks to undo the EPA rules to control toxic emissions from cement plants. The EPA rules, if kept in place, would cut mercury emissions by roughly 92%. According to Jennifer Peterson, attorney with the Environmental Integrity Project, cement kilns are among the top mercury polluters in many states, and the long overdue EPA rules will protect Americans by drastically reducing mercury and other harmful pollution. This new House resolution, however, places thousands of American families at risk. Now, with Carol Browner in office, I wonder if there will be anyone to protect the EPA rules from being undone by the Republican Congress. Scott Siegel, an energy expert for a law and lobbying firm in Washington, said that Ms. Browner's leaving may be a sign the Obama administration is becoming more sensitive to the concerns of business. Whatever the outcome of the EPA rules, you can still write to the New York State Department of Health and the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and ask them to enforce the EPA's measures as they apply to the Lafarge project. You can find those addresses at www.friendsofhudson.com and at www.case-ny.org. Unfortunately, we can no longer assume the agencies in place to monitor these projects are monitoring them, and so it is up to citizens to pay attention and make your voices heard. Lafarge is a global company with billions of dollars in revenue, and they can afford to make their plant the cleanest it can be, therefore protecting not only many local jobs, but also the health of everyone in our community. In fracking news, a long article by Abraham Lustgarten, with many people responding with comments, was posted 2 days ago on ProPublica.org titled, "Climate Benefits of Natural Gas May Be Overstated." This article has to do with new data presented by the EPA, which doubles its previous estimates for the amount of methane gas that leaks from loose pipe fittings and is vented from gas wells. As more natural gas is drilled, the EPA expects these emissions to increase dramatically. Spokesman for the Independent Petroleum Association of America and the natural gas lobbying groups, Energy in Depth, American Clean Skies Foundation, and America's Natural Gas Alliance, which have all been pushing to expand the use of gas, declined to comment on the EPA's new figures and what they mean for the comparison between gas and coal. Environmental groups say factual data on how much methane, a potent greenhouse gas, is emitted from gas fields and what the warming effect of that methane is should be locked down before major policy decisions are made to shift the nation toward more reliance on gas. James Rogers, CEO of Duke Energy, one of the nation's largest power companies, has been a vocal proponent of cap-and-trade legislation to limit greenhouse gas emissions. Rogers worries that a blind jump to gas could leave the country dependent on yet another fossil resource without stemming the rate of climate change. And if domestic reserves turn out to be smaller than predicted, or the nation runs out of gas and turns to liquefied gas imported from overseas, then the greenhouse gas footprint of natural gas would be almost equal to coal, as reported in 2007 in the journal Environmental Science and Technology. CEO Rogers says, "In the 60s, we put a needle in one arm. It was called oil. If the shale gas doesn't play out as predicted, and we build a lot of gas plants in this country, and we don't drill offshore, we're going to be putting the needle in the other arm, and it's going to be called gas." So, there you have it, from the CEO of one of our largest power companies, an analogy of our dependence on fossil fuels to drugs and addiction. We've got to get off our addiction to fossil fuels. It's that simple. And, like any addict, the problem trickles out. Our fossil fuel addiction causes rampant greed, endless wars, destruction of our vital natural resources like water, and it's also causing the highest rate of plant and animal extinction on the planet ever. There's a saying often applied to addictions that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, but expecting a different result. So, isn't it time we get the fossil fuel needles out of our arms and try something different? So that's the environment report for this week. Pretty cheery. I promise I'll have something more fun soon, like I was just reading about flying snakes and whistling caterpillars. But coming up next on Tell It Like It Is, we're here with Chris Reed and Don Moore to talk about the Hudson Waterfront Project. And we'll have a little music first, and we'll be right back.
want to lay down my burden.
Down
by the riverside.
I said down.
Down by the riverside.
Right down.
Down by the riverside. I'm gonna lay down my burden.
Down.
Down by the riverside. Steady and walk no more.
No more. If it ain't gone
steady, one no more.
Beverly.
Steady, one no more.
Beverly.
Steady, one no more.
We're here with Chris Reed, who is the president of the Friends of Hudson, and Don Moore, president of the Hudson Common Council, to talk about the Hudson waterfront, an issue which is in everyone's mind at the moment. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't know, just where should we begin? Chris, why don't you kind of tell us what the environmental point of view is concerning the waterfront, what you would consider ideal from an environmentalist point of view.
Well, the Mayor Scalera once posed that almost exactly the same question to me, and in his typically direct way. And I saw that the process that we're under is really to make the Hudson waterfront more part of the city and part of the river. There are ways in which it's been cut off, particularly the South Bay, which I hope we'll talk about in some detail this morning. So I think from an environmentalist point of view, it's really a question of understanding what we have in the way of assets. They've been much abused over 150 years of industrial development, but we can reverse a lot of that. And our organization, and working with also ad hoc task force, are really focused on trying to bring to the attention of the wider community the value of this asset from an ecological point of view. There's a tremendous amount of vitality there. There's a daily exchange with the tides, with Hudson River, even though there's been blockages. So it's a tremendous resource. And part of the injustice is that it's one that's not very accessible to the residents of the city of Hudson as well as the larger county. And that's from an environmental point of view, to bring the South Bay and the waterfront so that it is really part of the daily experience of the people who live here, I think is my short answer to your question.
And Don, as an elected official, you sort of have to satisfy not only the environmentalists but also the business community. Is that correct?
Well, the LWRP addresses a number of different communities, but indeed it does. It does have residential, it has business, has commercial components, and it also has environmental components. And as Chris said, there's both, as far as the environment is concerned, there's both the South Bay and the North Bay, and both need to be focused on, and both need to be reclaimed and redeveloped. And I think that so that it's. And I don't think that they are separate. I see them together, and I think the LWRP puts them together. They are different. If you look down from a sort of a geospatial view of the entire LWRP territory, you can see that there are components that already existing components of Warren Street and Front Street, and then there are places that where there can be development, and there are places where there shouldn't be commercial or residential development, like the North and the South Bay, and we need to come up with a comprehensive plan, both hydrologically and ecologically, for both the North and the South Bay, and both of those are being worked on simultaneously. I think that the other piece to mention about the LWRP, one of the pieces that's not controversial, is that there are major zoning changes that are the key tool that the city will have to address both the South Bay and conservation and the North Bay, and also to reduce the industrial character that Chris has mentioned was a part of the waterfront for most of its lifetime. and to have a more integrated waterfront. It's a small area, but I think that we can come up with an integrated waterfront within the next 5 to 10 years.
The North Bay poses fewer problems than the South Bay, I think. Is that correct?
Well, certainly our focus has been more on the South Bay, but I think Don is absolutely right to see it as a larger system. And I would even go beyond the North Bay to the Stockport Flats. If you really are talking about habitat restoration and potential for redevelopment of the fishery system for even commercial fishing, I think to see this much larger relationships along the river that, they're very, very closely connected. I would say of those three centers of ecological activity, that the South Bay is the one that's the most in need of remedial attention at this point. But that's not to overlook the North Bay. That also has been landfilled. But it has, I think, a lot more of the kind of characteristics that we'd like to see in the South Bay. There's more bird life, more rare birds that are being sighted there than in the South Bay, for example. So that's the kind of parity we'd like to see, I think, over time.
At this point, the South Bay appears to be a couple of small ponds.
Yes.
When you talk about restoration, you're talking about actually turning it into a body of water again?
Well, ideally, I'm not a fan of the so-called causeway that bisects the bay into an east and west basin, what used to be called, I guess, the larger and smaller South Bay. If it were up to me, I'd like to see that dam, which is the way I prefer to call it, because then you start to see it in relationship to water rather than to land. I'd like to see that removed, or short of that, perforated in ways so that the more imprisoned parts of the bay actually get some of that flushing action of the river that I think is a key to long-term health. Now, how we get there is a complicated story. There are lots of different stakeholders, there's ownership issues with Holcim and so forth. So the devil's in the details. But we are trying to really focus on those details in ways that can be most helpful to the city as it tries to chart a course of action. And we have to think in really larger blocks of time, 5 years, 10 years. We're looking at other cases of similar restoration, like Gooseneck Cove in Newport, Rhode Island. These are projects that, from this point on, would take maybe a decade to really accomplish, to get all of the partners that you need to make something really positive happen. And so we want to start now to do that. Even as the LWRP is being finalized, we've initiated, I think, really fruitful, potentially fruitful contacts with the Army Corps of Engineers. I think the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is another major partner. Even USDA has programs of restoration. So there's a lot that we can do working particularly with federal level, even more than the state, because, as you know, the state is kind of embattled right now with its budgets. There's a tremendous amount of attrition of staff at all of the agencies that are relevant to the South Bay. So we really have to look farther for support for these kinds of goals.
One thing I've never quite understood, which maybe you can explain, the so-called causeway, the railroad bed across the South Bay,
mm-hmm.
has been described as being in Holcim's private ownership. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So how does that this is, I guess, one of those complicated issues.
Well, this is the multi-million dollar question, because they have a tremendous economic stake in the quarries and, of course, to the river. And ownership is nine-tenths of the law, and this is something we have to reckon with in one way or another. If we can't take it outright by eminent domain, which I think is rather steep for a municipality like Hudson, especially in our economy, we have to think about negotiation of some sort. We need to talk to see what are the parameters that we can operate within. So I mean, just saying that's one of the realities that we, all of us, have to deal with in this issue.
I see that the
Holcim at this point owns 1,800 acres, which stretches from the mines on Beecraft Mountain all the way down to the port. One of the points of negotiation within the LWRP has been for a number of years is to try to come to an agreement with Holcim so that they would give over as much of that property as humanly possible so that it could be preserved reclaimed and the development would be prevented there. But indeed, that negotiation is embedded in the LWRP. I mean, the current port, for example, this is a point that's been talked about. The current port is 14 acres. When the Greenport decision was made, the SLC decision in 2005, those 14 acres were a particularly important part of the decision because it provided for a very large port. For the shipment of Holcim's St. Lawrence's proposed cement plant. Where we are now is that when the LWRP is passed, we have some reasonable expectation, although there's nothing written and there's no contract signed yet, that the port will only be 7 acres and the remaining 7 acres will go to either to the city or a nonprofit organization. Similarly with the South Bay. At this point, and we're probably only about 2 months away from having the LWRP returned by the Department of State and passed by the Common Council, or at least considered by it. We have an agreement to have all of the South Bay, with the exception of the Causeway, given to the city or to a nonprofit organization. And that takes in all of the property of Holcim that's within the city limits. The remaining property is within the Greenport town limits. So we can only negotiate for what's within the city limits.
And the Holcim property begins more or less at that slip near the Riverfront Park, correct? To the south of the Riverfront Park.
Yes.
And how far along the river, how much river frontage do they have?
Well, they have, I don't know the exact footage, but the total property is 14 acres. Right, they would give up roughly half of the river frontage that they have if these deals all come to pass. It's probably, I don't know, 600 to 700 feet, but I'm guessing. I couldn't give you an exact figure.
And the main reason people on the environmental side would prefer to have the trucks bringing limestone down to the riverfront go farther north is simply for the sake of restoring the South Bay?
Well, yeah. If you're trying to reintegrate the bay, It seems that one of the options to be considered is to go around the bay, not around the bay the way it is now through the city of Hudson. I think everyone has agreed on that as being a major problem. But there's a whole smorgasbord of options there, and I think the one that you're referring to, which was first proposed by Carrie Haddad when she was alderwoman, was to go on the south side of L&B and across to the tracks from there. And that's one that I think procedurally, in the most recent comments, a lot of people brought up the fact that this option somehow did not appear in the draft generic environmental impact statement as one of the options to be considered. And that seemed very strange because it had some of the least objections in some ways. I mean, one of the options actually went through the L&B building, so it presupposed that it would be torn down. We're not proposing that, but we're proposing using a route that has some existing familiarity with people. It's not legal to go there, but people do know about it. So anyway, I think one of the questions here about the LWRP is that all of the options are on the table and that we can make assessments in a transparent way of what the pros and cons are and proceed from there. So that's something we have pushed very heavily for.
Right. The since the the draft generic environmental impact statement came back with ostensibly alternatives to the causeway, the alternatives that were down at by the waterfront, nothing coming through the city, as Chris says. There have been discussions and fairly intense discussions on that point in terms of changing the sort of the policy statements within the LWRP. Previously, up until about this past summer, the LWRP described the causeway as the preferred route from 9G to the port for trucking. There were intense discussions within the Common Council and within the community at large. And what has occurred, or when the LWRP is returned with the Department of State comments from the Department of State, there will be alternative routes. There will not be a single preferred route. And I can say that with some confidence. Now, the preferred, it may be a staged effect, but the current thinking is that the causeway that ONG may have a clear right to use the causeway. The Department of the DEC has ruled that. What we're looking at, as Chris says, is building a road that would go across the north side of the South Bay, south of the LB building, and we're hoping that we can, in effect, widen that road so that it would be a public road, not just a private road for the trucking, so that it would be so that we would have an access to the waterfront that would be where you wouldn't have to go through the city, which I think many do think that it would aid in the development of the waterfront if there were a direct public road.
Some people, in fact, I think Friends of Hudson, maybe among them, prefers that the road would go to the south of L&B rather than to the north of L&B on that L&B property. Why is that?
Well, I think one of the objections to the north side is CSX, which weighed in with its an appendix to the LWRP DGIS that said under no circumstances did they countenance having routes that crossed their grade crossing. And so,
is that the Broad Street crossing?
Well, I think immediately south of that crossing, I think it's city owned, if I'm not mistaken.
If I may, the problem with the north side is that it's simply too narrow. It's difficult to navigate because you have to make a right at the building and then make a left around the north side of the building, and there's very little room there. There's no room to build a road in addition to the property access to the property. And indeed, as Chris says, you begin to abut the CSX spur. There is a small crossing of the CSX spur to the east of Front Street, but CSX has categorically prohibited traffic across that small spur, so that the terminus of the original alternative around the north side of the building was to come back into the parking lot of LB and then go to the south of and then go back to the south of the Basilica to Front Street, make a right on Front Street, and then a left on the Broad Street crossing. The Broad Street crossing actually crosses the main north-south line of the railroad.
Yeah. So, and I think that I just want to reinforce Don's point about the public road aspect of this option. It has different call letters, but the causeway option does not have a public option. So
simply wouldn't be able to use it because it's private.
They've said that out of the kindness of their hearts, they might allow traffic on certain times of the week, but that's not really what we're looking for. We're really looking for something that does have another way to access the waterfront, which, as you can see, is actually very limited. It's one of the design problems that is makes this whole planning process, depending on your point of view, either very problematic or very, very interesting. You have that crossing, and then you have the Front Street Bridge over the tracks, and that's it. So we would love to have more options, I think, and that's another reason for having this option that would be south of LB.
This also requires some eminent domain proceedings?
I'm not sure about that question.
It might, for a small amount of the property, the road that goes to the south of LB. But the point is to, I'm sorry. The property that the road would go on is owned entirely by LB. It's not developed. They, in effect, they own a piece of the north end of the South Bay. And the eminent domain issues are one of the reasons why this is tricky. I don't think that there are small eminent domain issues and there are large eminent domain issues. I mean, the large issue eminent domain issues are the entire Wholesome holdings of 1,800 acres. The medium-sized eminent domain issues would be LB building itself, and they're holding out for approximately $5 million for that building. The minor eminent domain, possibly easement issues, would be to build a road south of LB. I would say that there's been a great deal of discussion and controversy about eminent domain. The one thing I can say is that eminent domain is not proscribed. It's not removed from the LWRP as an option. There had been some concern earlier that that would be the case, and that will not be the case.
Let's take a break here for some music, Sam.
Okay, sounds good. What do you have for us?
We can try that.
Moon, river wider than the mile. I'm crossing you in style someday. Oh, dream maker, you heartbreaker, wherever you are going, I'm going your way. Two drifters off to see the world. There's such a lot of world to see. We're out the same rainbows in waiting round the bend. My huckleberry friend, Moon River and me.
Chris Reed and Don Moore discussing the Hudson waterfront. Chris, you said you'd like to talk about a FEMA study?
Yes. We met, and I'm including Don here, with the South Bay Task Force, and also there was a member of the then, or a congressman at that time, his local office, Scott Murphy, and Mark Willinger of Scenic Hudson, met last April with two members of the Army Corps of Engineers who were up here to do a kind of a site visit and kind of meet the some representatives of the community to talk about what our concerns were. And one of the reasons that they were there was that they are in the latter stages of developing this plan, which is a series of recommendations, maybe scoping of issues having to do with a 2007 event. April 2007, there was a nor'easter that affected and flooded 14 counties, including Columbia County, including the South Bay. And we're looking forward very much to seeing what they come up with. We may just get a few sentences in there. We don't know. Our group, Friends of Hudson and the South Bay Task Force, did furnish them with materials on the South Bay so that they are up to speed on the issue from our perspective. These recommendations, it's a multi-watershed report, may have some bearing on policy, local policy. It may be influential in, depending on the timing, in terms of the language that's introduced in the final version of the LWRPI. We don't know. But in any case, it was an important meeting because it initiated a relationship which developed into another possibility. I want to make it clear that the FEMA study is about flooding and what local communities can do to mitigate that in the future, anticipating that there are going to be more and more storm events. Do you want me to?
Well, I just wanted to interject. The part of the flooding problem comes from the fact that storm drains from the city of Hudson empty out into that area, correct?
Well, it's not a very efficient system. We have, I think this is a river community that has, as most river communities, including New York City, have basically hard engineered infrastructure to deal with flooding. But the name of the game has changed here to what's called soft engineering technology, which means to increase the porosity of all of the land surfaces that the city has jurisdiction over, so that the water is absorbed in natural ways and doesn't overwhelm the system and spew sewage into untreated sewage into the rivers, which is a frequent problem with these dual systems. Hudson has had that issue for some time. So it's been our perspective to make sure that this is part of the thinking and the language that's in the LWRP so that it's a platform for perhaps a creative project down the way to what they call blue belts, which are ways of naturally absorbing water so that the system can properly treat sewage at all times, even in peak weather events. Anyway, I think that the South Bay is potentially part of the solution. I don't know until we have the right kind of expertise to assess that, but the Army Corps may be helpful in delineating some possibilities for future initiatives.
Let me take a the city is built on a plain with escarpments with ravines on either side. The ravine to the north leads directly into the South Bay. The ravine to the south does lead directly into the South Bay. It is a natural flow point. One of the things that the city's doing through its water treatment program is to come up with better systems for separating stormwater overflow from sewage, so that indeed we can control better the flow of water into the system, so that it doesn't flood quite as much. Although there are always potentials for flooding, and as Chris has indicated, one of the best ways to deal with that is to ensure greater porosity. Now, of course, I think it's an open secret that indeed the LB building itself was built on the South Bay. So in terms of retarding the natural flow out, that building is a kind of dam. There are sewers, there are piping systems underneath it, but they don't necessarily help the natural flow into the South Bay. Now, one of the interesting things that I wanted to point out was that another benefit of Friends of Hudson's meeting with the Army Corps of Engineers was to learn that they have the opportunity for studying the contaminant situation within the South Bay and possibly adding to remediation efforts. This is also as a consequence of the FEMA study, but it's a separate initiative. And I have to say that Chris, particularly with a group, has worked very hard to interest the Army Corps of Engineers in pursuing that study. And that study is a piece of a longer series of studies that are called for in the LWRP about the hydrology and the ecology and what the options are for restoring the South Bay. There was a Scenic Hudson workshop 6 months or so ago about research, or the current state of research on the South Bay. And one of the things that I found fascinating was that in terms of your question about water flow, is that for every 1 gallon of water that flows down and naturally out of the city into the South Bay, 7 gallons flow in. There's a tremendous amount of interchange between the South Bay and the river that is a major component of how we regard the possibilities down there. And I think the possibilities are great for bringing it back, and that needs to be one of our goals.
Yeah, I could maybe just add a little bit more about the contaminant study. It was actually something that the Army Corps kind of alerted us to as a possibility. And in due course, we made contacts with our congressional offices. And now, because we have a change with our local congressman, we have to kind of start over. But there's been a transfer of all the documents from Scott Murphy's office to Chris Gibson's. And we have solid connections with the senator's office, particularly Senator Gillibrand, to pursue this. We're starting to get letters of support from various organizations, Scenic Hudson, Friends of Hudson, the city, and we have some others, I think, in the wings. And what I see this as kind of getting us off the dime a little bit, this idea that if we can get something that's 100% federally funded, there's no local matching requirements at this stage, we can get a real focus on what are the conditions there that we need to know before we even start to talk about restoration. We need to have intelligence about what's buried there, so to speak. They can do this in a very clean way without having to be on the property with documents of the history of the industrial uses and the permitting and so forth. It's a very necessary first step, but I think it could lead to others.
And how does this all kind of mesh with the with adopting the local waterfront revitalization plan?
I think it's completely harmonious. It's just a matter that they are at the moment on parallel tracks, but there's language, as Don just mentioned, in the LWRP to support this. And we need more study. We need especially to know about contaminants, but also about the movement of water. Scenic Hudson did a sort of a pioneering study, the Hudsonia study, which was really more about an inventory of flora and fauna in a particular transept of the South Bay that I think is a first step, but I think it needs to be supplemented in, with follow-up studies. And at that meeting that we had last June, our notions were completely endorsed by the other ecologists that were present. So,
and as far as any new business development that might take place down there, that doesn't really necessarily affect anything that goes on with the South Bay.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think that there are certainly the LWRP does not, with the exception of the deep water port and the aggregate shipment, does not in any way propose any industrial growth down there. And indeed, there's no manufacturing, industrial manufacturing that would be permitted within the LWRP once the zoning is passed. There are large swaths, for example, of the bay right of the South Bay area, the waterfront, that are zoned industrial. Those will be much, much narrowed within the when the new zoning is passed. As far as other business development is concerned, it really shouldn't, because the business development would be north of the mildly north around the train station and on either east or west of, say, the train station, and. We've gotten the salt out, which should have some beneficial effect on the character of the bay.
How do they bring the salt in now, by the way?
They don't bring the salt in. They are now prohibited from bringing salt in in any fashion. The only thing they can do is take the salt out.
I see. But when they need salt for the towns, they bring it in by truck now. Is that it? Or
no, no, the, no. There is no salt that is trucked or barged.
Oh, really?
into the waterfront. The only permission they have is to take salt out.
I see.
Yeah, and that of course is supposed to end in May of 2012.
Now there was a couple of weeks ago there was some news about the possibility of a restaurant going in across from the Riverfront Park.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been any development on that front?
Eric Galloway expressed an interest in purchasing what's called the Dunn's Warehouse. It's an old coal gasification plant, a beautiful brick building right on the waterfront park, had expressed purchasing it, and the city is exploring the option. The city has the authority to sell to an owner, but we need to get an appraisal. That appraisal is in process, and as soon as we have the appraisal, then the discussions will restart again with the Galloway organization about the character of the arrangement that's made with them. For example, we have an agreement that I think will be a strong part of that, which is that they if they don't develop the property within 2 years, that the city can buy it back. There is a clause that if they don't develop it within a certain period of time, they have to pay the city a certain amount of money. We want it. It's an important part of the development of any land use planning down on the waterfront, and we want to be sure that we've seen preliminary engineering drawings. They look very favorable in terms of what a major restaurant, for example, a brew pub, would go in. Might be one option that would go in there. But we'll have more on that probably in the next month.
There have also been rumors that there could be a Marriott hotel coming down to that general area, to the Kaz Warehouse.
The Kaz Warehouse is the old, for folks who know the area, there is a one-story old, what's known as the old Kaz building, not the new Kaz building, which is out on Route 9 in Greenport. The city now owns that. As of about a month ago, all the paperwork has been completed. The question is, and of course, it needs to be torn down. It's a piece of property. The building is worthless. And what then would go in there? And a hotel is one possibility. The city certainly does need a hotel. It would be lovely if we had a good high end, a relatively not a terribly large hotel. However, there is no, to my knowledge, current interest expressed in developing one there.
I see. What are your thoughts on something like that, Chris?
Well, I think the more, depending on the proposal, I'm for the increase in stakeholders in the area of the waterfront, particularly of the ones that we've mentioned. I think they become advocates for further improvements. We know, for example, that with the Basilica Industria and the 10-year ownership by Catherine Smith and Patrick Doyle, that they were major advocates for the improvement of the South Bay. And we want more people like that who have literally a stake in the future. And I think this is a positive direction.
Did the sewer lines ever get extended back down, all the way down to Basilica Industria, or is that something that
yes.
still has to be done?
The sewer lines are in. The question was, were the bathrooms, and the new owners, the Stones, are actively getting those installed. So that issue will be resolved soon.
Anything else you gentlemen would like to add to this discussion?
Well, I think you know, one of the themes here that I can maybe just tease out a little bit more prominence is the idea of kind of changing the balance of the way we as a community think about the waterfront and the South Bay. I know that for the last few years that the discussions, because of the trucking and the real problems that that has for the inner city communities, has had a very high level of attention. What I want to bring to maybe greater parity is the idea of the natural systems in our midst that can ultimately be of tremendous benefit to even the poorest among us. You know, when you think of the proximity of these natural features to the inner city, I think we have a tremendous potential here. You probably heard of the term nature deficit disorder. It was coined by the author Richard Louv. I sometimes joke that the planning process suffered a little bit from that syndrome, but it's the idea of really bringing the life of nature into the everyday experience of everybody. It's something that we're so abundant here in the county, and yet there are these pockets of distance. So I see this whole area, and I want to point out that much progress has been made in the last 5 years, I think, to make the waterfront more accessible. This is a boon. And we need to continue. Now it's going to get more complicated, I think, because of the ownership issues and just the logistics of how you change something that's been bisected and sliced and diced in so many ways by railroad tracks, by asphalt and so forth, by attitudes. But I think that this is, I think, what I would like to emphasize. And just want to mention that we're going to be launching a website that's going to be right brain oriented. It's going to try to give people direct experiences of the South Bay through imagery, and maybe we can find other means too. There is an earlier version of that we shared with the public. It's South Bay Task Force .blogspot.com. And what it is a series of photographs of the South Bay that for many people is a revelation of really what's out there. They were all taken by Timothy O'Connor, who is a naturalist, who with his wife Meg Carlin have been our eyes and ears really to what's out there. And what we want to do is make their experience not so difficult for other people.
I agree with the term revelation. The photographs are beautiful, but they are also so informative of what the diversity is. I mean, people walk past and drive past the South Bay and think, ugh. You know, it's a swamp. Well, this is a very, very living property that we have with great deal of diversity.
And in what way are they a revelation? What do they show?
Well, they show floral life, bird life, and particularly the flora. You simply would not know, even walking past, what's there and what they've discovered. But indeed, there is. It's not just, you know. Phragmites and purple loosestrife. There's some incredible diversity in there.
Hmm. Alan, did you have something you wanted to?
What would be the scenario in terms of the revitalization that might have to do with infrastructure, revitalizing the environment or making it work? Would there be jobs involved in that process? And then after it's done, what would be the opportunity for jobs after?
That's an interesting question. I think jobs, one has to do with fisheries. I don't know if any of you knew the late Everett Knack, but he talked a lot about the destruction of the commercial fishing industry in the Hudson. That was a livelihood for a lot of people. The South Bay could be maybe play a role partly in that resurgence as habitat for fish in their early stages of development. I mean, that's one possibility. I think educationally, having budding naturalists have early experiences of there, maybe leading to careers as environmental stewards is another. If they have an experience early in life of that, certainly there would be, I think, construction-type jobs for restoration. But this is something we need to flesh out. We're at the very early stages here, and this is for the long haul.
Yeah, I think that if you have, Alan, if you have a look at some of the infill areas, and particularly in the North Bay, which I just happened to have been looking at recently because the Columbia Land Trust and the mayor and I have been having some discussions about this, is that if we bring back, and I don't mean to break off from the South Bay because I think the same thing's possible there with, say, the Basilica, but in the North Bay we have the Button Factory. There are places there that would be much more attractive for small businesses, for entrepreneurs, if indeed these areas are brought back. I mean, the notion that that environmental improvement is somehow isolated only to itself as a benefit doesn't make any sense. I mean, having a redeveloped South Bay and a redeveloped North Bay is the same thing as having good libraries and good schools in terms of drawing businesses to a community. The people who will invest in a community want the quality of life there. They want the old buildings. They want the sense of space. They want things that are close, where you have city and natural life, as Chris has described. So that I think that we can't necessarily, predict. But on the other hand, everything we know says that indeed this will be helpful for business development and jobs.
Well, I guess we are out of time. Chris Reed, Don Moore, thank you very much for coming in. I have a feeling we'll be seeing you from time to time here at WGXC as the situation continues to develop.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you. Happy to come back.
Like a river, I've got peace like a river. I've got peace like a river in my soul. I've got peace like a river. I've got peace like a river. I've got peace like a river in my soul. I've got love like an ocean. I've got love like an ocean. I've got love like an ocean in my soul. I've got love like an ocean. I've got love like an ocean. I've got love like an ocean in my soul. I've got joy like a fountain. I've got joy like a fountain. I've got joy like a fountain in my soul. I've got joy like a fountain. I've got joy like a fountain. I've got joy like a fountain in my soul. You know.